Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So it's a week into Boris Johnson's premiership, but has the honeymoon already finished? Yesterday he was heckled in Scotland. Katie, how did that visit go? Not as well as expected.
Well, I don't think there were particularly good omens ahead of that visit per se. As we talked about yesterday on the podcast, we know Scotland is a difficult point for Boris Johnson. We know his popularity there is not particularly high, particularly when you compare it to other parts of the country. And he had two difficult meetings, one with Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister, and one with Ruth Davidson, the Scottish Conservative leader. Now, I think the boos for what we were really expecting, some kind of moment like that. It's not representative of the whole of the country, clearly. It's a group that decided to gather because he was there. But it does give that sense that it's not the optics that you particularly want on your first visit to Scotland as Prime Minister. I think when you look at the meat of the issue, he had the meeting with Nicola Sturgeon where Boris Johnson was very dismissive of the idea of a second Scottish independence referendum. He said he didn't see the need for one. Ultimately, these are two politicians on completely different tracks, so they can meet and they can say things and they're never going to agree on Brexit and they're never going to agree on the union. I think by far the more difficult meeting is that of Boris Johnson and Ruth Davidson, the Scottish Conservative leader, because they are not on a happy path. Ruth Davidson has made very clear she does oppose a no-deal Brexit. And I think Boris Johnson's attitude towards Scotland and the fact, in a way, he has had a slightly bulldozer approach. He sacked David Mundell as Scotland's secretary to the dismay of many Scottish Conservative MPs and Ruth Davidson, and brought in a new figure, Alistair Jack. And that might pay off in the long term, but you can see today you've had William Hague, Tory grandee, writing in his Telegraph column that actually Boris Johnson would do well to listen to Ruth Davidson, at least a little, when it comes to how to handle Scotland and Scottish Conservatives. So I think at the moment they haven't worked out yet how to have a relationship, which means both sides can get what they want. I mean, clearly it's different electorates to some degree, but they do need to find a way to work together, because the Scottish Conservative success in the 2017 snap election was crucial to the success of, if you can call it success when we talk about election, but to the Tories staying in power, at least holding on, 13 Scottish Conservative MPs. And if you were to lose those, you'd have to make big gains in England. And also, the majorities in Scotland are very small. I think a high number of those new seats are below 5,000. So this is fragile. And I don't think Boris Johnson's Scotland visit has yet shown a bright future. But it is something they're both just going to have to work out.
James, what is the tactic when it comes to Ruth Davidson? I mean, first of all, do they care about Ruth Davidson's role in all of this? And secondly, how are they going to get her on side, if so?
Ruth Davidson and Boris Johnson have always had a difficult relationship. I was trying to look up a story about Ruth Davidson went to a farm once with George Osborne. There was a bull that had rather an unfortunate accident. And Ruth Davidson nicknamed the bull Boris, which is very her approach to him. And I think you can say, I think they are both making tactical mistakes at the moment. I think Ruth Davidson is making a tactical mistake because there is now a genuine chance of a no-deal Brexit. If she says that she is opposed to a no-deal Brexit under all circumstances, and it ends up happening, the SNP will say, well, that's proof that, you know, that you are useless and your Tory, Scottish Tory MPs are useless. You know, and so I think that is the tactical error she's making. I think Boris Johnson is making a tactical error not to tread more delicately around Ruth Davidson. I can understand why Boris Johnson wanted a new Scotland secretary, that there was always going to be a question with David Mundell. He would be vulnerable to a question, but you've been so opposed to no deal in the past. You wrote a letter to the last Prime Minister with Ruth Davidson opposing it. What's changed your mind? It might have been more sensible for the Johnson camp to have kind of reached out to Ruth Davidson to find, you know, who she would like to have had as Scotland secretary. Now, look, obviously, on the one hand, in this office, we know it's going to make that Katie's event with David Mundell at the Fringe Policy
a daily plug.
Yep, daily plug until it's like Michael Gove's No Deal preparation meetings. Yeah. these are you're going to get these plugs every day.
Much
until
cheaper,
no, but I think they are both making tactical errors, and I think that Ruth Davidson's problem is, you know, she is setting herself up as, you know, What are you going to tell your Scottish Tory MPs at Westminster to do about this no deal?
Right.
Which is a problem for her, I think. And Boris Johnson setting things up in that, you know, Ruth Davidson will always kind of guard her own fiefdom in Scotland. And, you know, she is more than anybody else responsible for the revival of a Scottish Tory. So I think, yeah. I think you've got two very large egos here, and trying to find a way for them to coexist is not going to be entirely easy. I suspect over the coming months we're going to see a bit more differentiation from the Scottish Tories. This not a kind of full DUP style relationship, but I suspect that that for example in the budget, which we now expect in October, I suspect that will be even more transactional than it has been before. But the Scottish Tories will make clear that they are supporting the budget because there are a series of particular measures in it that benefit Scotland.
Katie, Number 10 has also come out and confirmed that they will not be meeting EU leaders until EU leaders signal that they would be willing to drop the backstop. And that has spooked markets, hasn't it?
Yes, and the pound has sunk to its 28-month low against the dollar. And this is being pitched in the narrative of the heightening of Boris Johnson's no-deal rhetoric. And I think it is just a reminder that we had a poll bounce to Boris Johnson at the weekend, but ultimately this is a government that is coming in with limited time, a very drastic plan. I mean, Theresa May never wanted to speak about the potential outcomes or complications of no deal for small businesses, for UK citizens, because they're worried that it could spook the markets, or you might have a situation where people started to have a backlash on Brexit, you upset the Remainers, or you just worried people. But this government's approach is completely different, which is to say, we're definitely doing it, whatever. There are some problems, we will do what we can to mitigate them, to help. But I think as a result of that, you are in the coming weeks, and particularly the coming months as you get closer, and I think it's now 93 days until we are supposed to leave, get more warnings. And one is obviously the pound falling, but I think you're going to get more business warnings. You're going to go back to things we had probably about a year ago of, you know, are these companies now going to move? I think the question is just more, how does the government plan to handle it? Because we know from the fact that you have senior number 10 aides saying Brexit by any means necessary, that they're not going to say, oh, well, now you've pointed out that there's a slight complication, we're going to sit back and actually we're going to delay this. We know that isn't going to be the response. So how do they pitch it? And one thing we heard about earlier in this week is the idea of spending money to do, I think it was pitched in some areas as a PR blitz, but I think it's actually an information campaign about what you need to do to prepare. But what impact is that going to have on the public mood and on businesses and the markets?
It was obvious that the pound was going to fall if the markets think the UK is going to leave without a deal. But the government's calculation here is relatively simple. Only if the EU thinks the UK is serious about leaving without a deal, does Boris Johnson think, you can unlock what he is convinced that there are kind of last minute, 5 minute to midnight concessions that the EU is prepared to make. If you're going to get those concessions, you've got to show that you're serious about no deal. Only way you can show you're serious about no deal is beginning to get the country genuinely ready for it, you know. But one of the things that was obvious, I think, about why the EU realised that Theresa May wasn't ever going to walk away was that the UK never set about preparing in the kind of serious way that any government would have to if you really were prepared to do no deal.
And over on the Labour side, Katie, today Alistair Campbell has written to Jeremy Corbyn saying that he will not be seeking to rejoin the party. I mean, I suppose Jeremy Corbyn's probably not that sad about it.
I doubt Jeremy Corbyn is crying into his cornflakes over the news. They clearly don't see eye to eye on many things, particularly the direction of the Labour Party. But what's happened is this all comes after Alistair Campbell admitted that he had voted Lib Dem in a recent vote. And after that, he was suspended from the party. And he now says he no longer wants to be a Labour member. He says the party is facing an existential crisis due to poor leadership. And actually, it's time to admit the truth, stop pretending, the party's been taken over, and move on. Now, as you point out, Alistair Campbell not being happy with Jeremy Corbyn is nothing new. The question is this feeling now something that is going to be reflected by a larger number, more surprising figures, or is it just the same crowd saying the Labour Party's changed? Now, we've heard lots about a new centrist party. It didn't work for Change UK, now the independents, formerly. I need updates on the phrases. The question is, the Lib Dems under Jo Swinson are clearly undergoing a resurgence, something I write about in the magazine this week. And Can Jo Swinson take a significant chunk of the Labour vote and make the Lib Dems become a serious electoral force? Or in doing that, do you just end up splitting with the Labour vote, with the Lib Dem vote? And although Labour isn't technically a Remain party, depending on who you ask, in a way splitting the Remain vote and the Labour at a general election. And with someone like Alistair Campbell, the implication is now be a proud Lib Dem. With Brexit realigning the way lots of voters go, how deep is that when it comes to your general election? And it's not just about Brexit, it's also about how you fund hospitals, how you fund policing, views on austerity and perhaps the role in the coalition, which is one of the big Corbyn attack lines against the Lib Dems. How many people can you actually bring over? I mean, Isabel wrote in her cover piece about efforts to potentially move Jeremy Corbyn. And some people have been picking up on this Alistair Campbell piece as a sign that there could be something imminent. But I still think it is hard to see the mechanism or how exactly you replace Jeremy Corbyn unless Jeremy Corbyn himself decides that he wants to go.
And I suppose with this Carr Beach thing, Tom Watson has been weakened.
Yeah, I think Carr Beach has clearly been very problematic for Tom Watson, and he comes at the hill very badly. I do think that Tom Watson has problems with the Labour membership regardless. I think that if you look at who seems to be popular, anyone who looks too critical of Jeremy Corbyn in the past, so Tom Watson, I think also Sadiq Khan, do not have popularity with the Labour membership on a general level. So it's hard to see how Labour would necessarily be the replacement leader. But also, I think it's something that lots of senior Labour politicians have said is, will Jeremy Corbyn himself choose to step down? Because that's the way you probably sure lead to one. I think the idea of having a challenger candidate still looks very tricky.
Mm. And James, do you think the Lib Dems can make the most of this political opportunity? First of all, to get people like Alistair Campbell on side, and secondly, to have a domestic agenda that is appealing beyond Brexit?
Well, I mean, I think for them, they've started with this very simple message of stop Brexit. And I
that's not exactly what they say, James.
No, and that is clearly proving to be effective. I think everyone expects them to pick up the Brecon and Radnorshire seat in this by-election on Thursday. I think that will give them another little helping hand. I think the Alistair Campbell thing is an interesting moment because despite the fact that Campbell and Jeremy Corbyn are clearly at opposite ends of a spectrum, Alistair Campbell is quite tribally Labour, I mean, to put it mildly. And for that tribalism to have broken down to this extent is, I think, a telling sign of how this Brexit debate is, and the Brexit debate combined with Corbyn is dissolving some of those tribal ties and the opportunities that creates. I think there is obviously a big opportunity for the Lib Dems here. I think there is an interesting question as to which is it, which is when there is a general election, does that classic voter view that this is a Labour-Tory contest lead to them being squeezed? Or do they benefit from the fact that people think at a general election, well, this is all about Brexit? So the real question is, are you Leave or are you Remain? And the Lib Dems are obviously the most unambiguously Remain party out there.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe, rate and review us through all the usual routes. And if you'd like to hear more from the Spectators team, then why not join Douglas Murray in conversation with Lionel Shriver this October in Westminster. They'll be chatting about identity politics on October 28th, and you can find tickets at spectator.co.uk/Lionel. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.